Welcome to Women on Air, a weekly show about women, feminism, and social justice, brought to you by CFUV's Women's Radio Collective.
So you're listening to CFUV 101.9 FM in Victoria. We also stream online at cfuv.uvic.ca. You are listening to Women on Air, and I am Jen, your host for today. I have a great show for you guys. First, I'm talking with the artistic director, Mercedes Baptiste Bennett, who is working on a performance that's taking place at the Blue Bridge Repertory Theater. And then in the second half, I am talking with Jennifer Stillwell, who is helping to supervise Split, which is the art exhibition that's going to be going on here at the University of Victoria for the fine arts graduates. So we're going to just get started right away talking with Mercedes. Hi, Mercedes. How are you doing today?
Hi, Jen. How are you?
I'm doing great.
Excellent.
So you are the artistic director of Cruel Tears, or Lagrimas Cruelas?
I'm the artistic director of Puente Theater, okay. And I'm doing a co-production with Blue Bridge Repertory Theater, and we're both companies are doing Cruel Tears, Lagrimas Cruelas.
Okay, and that's going to be premiering on May 1st, is that right?
Yes, we have two previews, April 29th and 30th, and then it opens in May 1st.
Great. So this play is actually a retelling of Ken Mitchell and the Humphrey and Dump Trucks classic Canadian musical Cruel Tears, which is based on the Shakespeare play Othello.
That's right.
And you've relocated the play from the Canadian prairies to a Texas border town. Can you just start by giving our listeners a quick synopsis of the play and an introduction to the characters?
Absolutely. Well, the original Cruel Tears, which was written in 75 by Ken Mitchell and Humphrey and the Dump Trucks, they set it in the Canadian prairies, and it dealt with Ukrainians, with the influx of Ukrainians in the Canadian milieu. And then Brian is the artistic director of Blue Ridge, we made an adaptation of Cruel Tears, and we took it to Mexico in 2006. Mm. And so there we made a new adaptation. It was called Lágrimas Crueles, all in Spanish, and we set it in the border between the States and Mexico in El Paso, in La Línea, which is on the Mexican side. So this time around, we wanted to do it from the American perspective, since we're showing it in Canada. So we're setting it in the States, in El Paso, which is the sister city of Ciudad Juárez in Mexico. The characters, we have Juan Ramírez, our main character, who would be your Othello character. The Iago character is Jack Deal. He's a Mexican-American. He was born in Mexico but crossed illegally into the United States and has worked really hard all his life to become an American. And so when Juan Ramírez comes in, and everybody loves him, and he gets the girl and everything, Jack can't stand it. So we are adding, in Othello, in Shakespeare's Othello, Iago hates Othello because of his race, and we wanted to add another dimension to it. So we are finding that our character, Jack, because of his Mexican-Americanness and the fact that he has had to work so hard to become an American in his own right, when a pure-blooded Mexican comes in, it's just too much for him. And so he does everything in his power to set him up and destroy his life.
So that's really, it has a different dimension to it, having it in that different location.
Absolutely, and for our time period, you know, there's just so many immigrants coming into the United States and Canada, so we thought it would be a very very important topic to discuss at this point in time.
So what motivated you guys personally to do this retelling?
Well, I'm from Mexico originally, mm-hmm. and I've been to the States many, many times, and I know how, you know, the tensions there are just in your face all the time, you know, and I see Canada is a different place because here we try to accept immigrants from all cultures and creeds, but there's still a lot of tensions. So for us, it's a way of, you know, showing what some of the issues that we might deal with in the future, and so that we start discussing them and seeing what alternatives are there for us.
So Othello's, or Shakespeare's original Othello, was originally kind of a commentary on racism and misogyny. How is that played out in this adaptation?
Well, as I was saying, Jack, who's our Iago character, mm-hmm. he is Mexican-American. Mm. And he has left Mexico to search for a better life. He crossed into the States illegally. Mm. And because of all the racism against him, he's just really tried to push down and get rid of all his Mexican identity. So he has changed his name from Juan to Jack Deal. He has married an American to get his green card. And he tries to be the most Texan of all, just because it's, for him, he thinks that he needs to kill the Mexican in him in order to belong in the state. So that tells you how the conditions in for the people, you know, in Mexico, and when they cross into the States, how much they have to change and to, you know, they think they have to do that because of the way they're treated, you know. So it's a very hard life for many of them.
Right. So it's really touching on issues of identity, it sounds like.
Absolutely.
And having to change to fit in to another constructed identity, which is the American identity, which
exactly.
I think is interesting. What about, can you speak at all to kind of the representation of women in the film as well, in the original play? Desdemona is, not to spoil it by anybody, but she's eventually murdered by her lover. Can you just talk about that in your act?
Yeah, well, in both the original Cruel Tears from the 70s, Kathy Jensen, who's our ingenue, and you know, the love interest of Juan Ramirez, our character, our Othello, in Cruel Tears and Cruel Tears Like a Masquerade, she dies in both. Juan kills her at the end because Jack has tricked Juan into thinking she has been with Ricky and another character. And so Jack does everything in his power to set them up. Mm-hmm. And in the end, she's killed by Juan as well.
Mm-hmm. And this is framed in a way of mistrusting of women and thinking of women as
unfaithful. Yeah, we really wanted to play with the male-female tensions, you know, and especially, I mean, Mexican culture, there's a lot of tension between male and female. It's a very chauvinist culture. So this play, we thought, it was perfect for us to deal with those issues and to even heighten them a little bit than the original.
So in what ways do you do that? How do you heighten them in the play?
Well, the language, the way that Jack treats his wife, Flora, who is American, but when he wants to put her down, he starts speaking Spanish so that she won't understand. Mm. So there's a lot of racial violence as well there from his side onto Flora, his wife. Mm-hmm. And just in the way that all the guys treat each other, you know, the Americans, the Texans and the Mexicans, and the way they treat women. There's two American girls, female characters, and one Mexican. So how those girls are treated differently by the two races mm-hmm. also speaks volumes, I think, to those tensions.
Is there an inequality between how the women treat each other?
No, the women in our play first don't really understand each other, mm-hmm. but come to realize throughout the play that they're not that different and that they... by the end, they really like each other and they help each other because they're there basically, you know, against the men in some ways. Mm. You know,
mm-hmm, very interesting. So something that you kind of touched on is that this play is actually bilingual.
Yes.
How is this being done on stage, and how will?
Well, it's a musical, so every character has, you know, songs, a lot of the plot is delivered through song. And we've adapted, Tim Williams is our music director, and he's done a beautiful job of adapting the original music of Cruel Tears, written by Humphrey and the Dog Trucks, which was more, you know, talking blues and set in the prairies and country music, to Norteño music and boleros and cumbia and the music of the border of Mexico and Texas. Mm-hmm. So we've changed all the music. And so both dialogue and music, we're going to project surtitles so that when there's Spanish being spoken or sung, the audience will be able to read the subtitles and understand what they're saying at those moments.
Mm-hmm. But also, I think it's really interesting or really nice to be able to just listen to the play in another language, even if you don't understand it. There's something very universal about the music that
Absolutely.
I think this will really attract a lot of viewers, I think.
And we'll also get to see how, in a way, similar this music is and how that also binds us together, you know? Like, for example, the accordion, which we use a lot in this play, the accordion was brought to the Americas by the Germans.
Huh.
And so the Mexicans pick it up and they create Norteño music, and then in Texas they have the polkas, which are very similar musical traditions, all brought in, you know, from Germany, and then they created their own music, but they have a lot of similarities.
Huh. So it's kind of a mixing of several different cultures in the music.
Yeah, and it's a way for us to show that, yes, we're you know, on one side of the wall and the border,
mm-hmm.
but in the end we're all human, and we're all dealing with the same issues: love, jealousy, hatred, racism, identity crisis, understanding who we are, who we're not.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so in the end, they all come together to an understanding of, yes, we're different, but we're dealing with the same things, so we're not that different.
Right. Just something that you mentioned, being on the different sides of a wall. Do you guys talk at all about the wall that is between the United States and Mexico?
Yes, there's a lot of references, both in the songs and in the dialogue, and it depends on each character. Some are legal, some are illegal. Who have crossed the border, they can't go back to their home.
Mm-hmm.
So they're kind of stuck in this no man's land, trying to be accepted, you know, and trying to get into the American culture. And they each treat it differently, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They all, some really want to maintain their Mexicanness, some really want to hide it at all costs so that they belong more in their mind.
Mm-hmm. As a Mexican-Canadian, how... are those themes relevant to your lives and your experiences?
Yes, they really are. I think when you're an immigrant, it doesn't matter where you're from, you're always dealing with a different culture, a different set of rules, understanding, and you always have a crisis of identity, you know, and so you're always... I believe in myself, I'm Mexican-Canadian. I've been in Canada for 17 years,
hmm.
and I came to Canada when I was 19, so... I'm almost at the point where I'll be half of my life in Canada and half of my life in Mexico, so I'm truly from both worlds. And at the same time, I'm not from Mexico anymore, and I'm not really truly from Canada, you know? So it's almost like there's a third realm where immigrants inhabit, you know, that they understand one world, they get to know a different world, so they just inhabit this third reality constructed from both their other two realities, you know.
Mm-hmm. Why do you think plays and musicals are a good way of expressing this kind of crisis of identity and things like that?
Well, I think plays are a really good way of getting a story told in a way that's, it can be vulnerable but at the same time safe,
mm-hmm.
Expressed beautifully through art. Music especially, it's an art form that just brings us together, you know. You don't have to speak another language to understand music. So we thought that this play did a really beautiful job of showing both cultures, showing their similarities, their differences, in a way that they can all join in on it.
And Cruel Tears was actually quite popular here in Canada, the original Canadian.
Yeah, it was. It was written in 1975, mm-hmm. and it opened at Persephone Theatre. Brian Richmond directed that production as well.
Mm-hmm.
And then it went to the Cultural Olympiad in Vancouver in 1976, I think, and then they did a year-long tour.
Wow.
It was, and it became a Canadian classic.
And so how do you think audiences will respond to this Spanish, English kind of mixing?
Well, I think they'll really like it, and I mean, I hope. But I do think it brings it to a place of relevance in terms of what's going on with immigration, not only in the States but in Canada as well. You know, like in the past few years, Mexicans have been denied. Well, now Mexicans need a visa in order to come to Canada before mm-hmm. visitors could just come, like most countries in the world. Mm-hmm. But a lot of Mexicans started coming and staying illegally. Mm-hmm. So Canada, and they were having a big problem with that. So Canada then put a lot of sanctions and barriers, you know, for Mexicans to even visit mm-hmm. Canada. Mm-hmm. So I think that we're... In the States, Mexicans are the biggest minority now, mm-hmm. and so it's just so close, you know, and it's North America. Mexico is part of North America, even though many people don't know that. Mm-hmm. So it's something that, you know, in the next 10, 20, 30 years, more and more and more Mexicans will be, you know, part of the Canadian ecology. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So it's good to start, you know, talking about these things, learning from each other, hearing what our stories are, and discussing this, our cultures together.
Mm-hmm. What implications do you think that this discussion has on the topics about citizenship? So you were talking a lot about immigration, and how does this relate to somebody understanding themselves as a citizen of one country or another, or dual?
Well, I think it all goes back to identity, you know, and it all depends on how people identify themselves. But, I mean, speaking for myself as somebody who was born in Mexico, I am Mexican and I've become Canadian. Mm. So I've come to this country in search of a better life. And so I've tried to become Canadian as much as possible, but, you know, always making sure that my Mexican culture is kept alive and to be able to share it with other people, because I think it's a beautiful culture, as I'm sure every immigrant thinks the same of their own culture. Mm-hmm.
And so what do you hope that audiences will walk away from after seeing this play?
I hope audiences walk away realizing how similar we all are, even though we come from other parts of the world or speak different languages or our music is different, our dances are different, or we live separated by walls, that at the end of the day, we all have a human heart, we all fall in love, we all become jealous, and we all need to get past that and try to better understand each other.
Mm-hmm. All right, and lastly, when is it premiering? How long is it playing?
It's premiering on May 1st at mm-hmm. the Roxy Theater.
Okay.
And it runs until May 11th. And then if a lot of people want to see it, there's the option of expanding the run until the 18th. But as it is now, it's from May 1st to the 11th.
All right. And how can people get tickets?
They can get tickets by going to www.ticketrocket.org mm-hmm. or by going to the Puente Theater website or the Blue Bridge Repertory Theater website. And from there, there's links to Ticket Rocket.
Great. That sounds like it's going to be a really interesting play, and it sounds like a lot of really important themes are coming up with immigration, racism,
yeah.
Sexism, all of these things, citizenship, all wound up into one artistic production.
Yeah, and with beautiful, beautiful music.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, no, we're really excited, and thank you so much for having me.
Yes, thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Okay.
All the best of luck.
Thank you. Bye, Jen.
Bye.
So that was Mercedes Baptiste Bennett, who is helping to produce, as the artistic director, Cruel Tears, Lagrimas Cruelas. So as mentioned, I have Jennifer Stillwell on the line with me. Hi, Jennifer.
Hello.
So you are an assistant professor in the visual arts department here at UVic, and you are supervising SPLIT, which is the annual visual arts BFA exhibit that is opening April 17th. Is that right?
That's right. Yeah, it opens on Thursday, April 17th at 7 o'clock in the evening.
Okay.
And then it runs all the way till Saturday, April 26th, 6 p.m.
Great. So can you start just by giving our listeners an overview of what SPLIT is?
SPLIT is an annual exhibition that highlights the graduating students from the BFA program. So they each produce an individual body of work or a major work that they're installing here in the exhibition. So we, at this moment, they're setting up and installing their works, and it's taking up the whole main level of the visual arts building. So there's several large rooms that have about 36. Yeah, there's 36 artists in the show. So they're kind of installing their work throughout the whole space.
Mm-hmm. And what kind of mediums are these pieces done in?
There's definitely a variety of mediums, including sculpture, photography, painting. There's large-scale drawings, video works, and things that kind of overlap between video and sculpture. Mm-hmm. So, you know, people doing very... taking on whole rooms and doing a video installation with sound. Some people are collaborating on works as well. Some people are putting up paintings and then collaborating with a sound artist to create a whole environment. So there's different directions people are taking contemporary strategies.
So... many of the students have been building up their portfolios throughout their degree, and this might be their first time to present to the public. Why is this important for graduating students?
Well, it's a necessary part of learning to present your work publicly. You know, a lot of the time you're working in your studio for long hours, very isolated, and so. But you are always working towards the potential of an exhibition, and so it's part of our program is to provide really experiential learning for the students so that they do always work toward that ultimate goal of showing their work publicly. So, yeah, it's always a very important part of creating work that you are kind of engaging with the public, putting ideas out there, presenting new ways of creating contemporary artwork.
So you're the supervisor, but it's actually the graduating students who are organizing and putting together the preparations for this event. Is this a part mm-hmm. of their classwork, or is it just kind of a skill building activity?
Yeah, they've definitely been working on it very hard over the past year or their school year. So it's through the Visual Arts Student Association. There's, they're an organizing committee, and they have branched off into different committees, including, you know, preparing the building. They were painting and repairing all the walls, in preparation for the work to be put up. And curatorial committee kind of working to prep the spaces, arrange the work visually within the space of the building, and catalog committees. They've produced a full color catalog that has images of each of the artist's work and statements from them, and that will be available at the opening and throughout the exhibition too. So they've definitely been working pretty hard on putting together their show, and that is made up. All those committees are made up of all the graduating students, so they all participate towards this final exhibition.
And what do you find exciting about SPLIT as the supervisor for this?
Well, it's definitely a lot of fun. It's, you don't necessarily... I haven't engaged with all the artists in my own teaching, so whatever they bring to the show is sometimes a surprise for me, of course. So... you know, it's been really exciting to work with the curatorial committee made up of students, and then I'm working with another faculty member, Robert Udes, to help them produce the exhibition. So, it's exciting to see what their voice is at this point in time, and just to see what their point of view is and what's emerged, which is all very... you could really, if you go through the show, nothing looks the same. Everybody kind of has their own points of view at this point, and I think that's what's exciting that emerges out of this experience, for sure, just to sort of tune into all those things.
So right now, just speaking as a university student myself, it's a pretty difficult job market for graduating students. Why do you believe that visual arts is still a relevant discipline?
I think that's a definitely a good question. But, you know, I think what it promotes, of course, most of all, is creative thinking, the use of the imagination, critical skills in terms of visuals, and also, you know, there's a lot of manual skills that you do pick up with working in visual arts. You learn to photograph, you learn to edit video, you learn to build things. There's a lot of different directions you could take a degree in terms of the skills that you exit out of this program with. It, you know, I think they could be applied in more than one way, in more than one field. So in that way, it does have a really open-ended possibilities towards not just working as an artist, but just being a critical thinker in society and applying that in different directions.
And you said that a lot of these skills that you learn through visual arts is very practical. Can you expand on those?
Yeah. For the most part, I teach video at the school. So, of course, that is always a balance for me, trying to teach practical skills, like how to edit video, how to work with professional video cameras, understanding the different formats, things like that. So, you know, all those things can be taken into different contexts out there in the world and applied, I think. So, you know, in terms of sculpture, you're learning how to work with tools, of course, and also reality, working with the medium of reality, really three-dimensionally, dealing with space and installation, which can be, again, applied, I think, in other directions. But ultimately, what we are working towards is people becoming individual artists. And I think there is, in Canada, a pretty strong visual arts culture. You know, there's different spaces in each city that advocate the kind of work that people are producing here. Definitely contemporary work, more experimental work. And, you know, I think it's a necessary function of our culture to have art, and any culture, for that matter.
You spoke earlier about the point of view of these emerging artists. What are some of the things that are coming out of these artists' points of view? What are you seeing? What themes are coming out?
Well, I guess I could speak to maybe some individual artists. Let me see. Yeah, if you come and take a look at some of the work, you know, like I said, they're working with a lot of different mediums. Like, for example, if Mina Chen, she's an artist who's working with the medium painting for the most part, but her work really evokes kind of her experience in the world, kind of has candy-like colors, very bright and playful. Her processes are very much, you kind of see them from the point of view of cooking sometimes, but they have that familiarity, but they also work as paintings. So, you know, it's really a playful sense to her work, whereas maybe another artist like Abigail Laycock, she's working more with ideas or systems that break down when she physically works with them. So she's making sculptures out of more commercial materials, including lights, and there's a sense of order to her pieces, but they kind of work into disorder. They look familiar. They are kind of more design-based. But they also play with, our perception of things that we already understand. So it's kind of hard to... It's one thing about visual art, it's something that you have to see. So it's something that is kind of hard to describe in some ways, But what I advocate is people come down and take a look at the exhibition, because it all is very individual. But it's really fun to sort of see people overlap two different mediums, like I said, people working with video and then building sculptural forms, mapping onto different surfaces with video, so it's not necessarily on a screen. So, you know, a lot of different play in different directions with a lot of different materials and mediums.
So, are there tickets that people have to buy, or is...
Nope.
So it's all free to the public?
It is free to the public, definitely.
Okay.
And it's open Monday to Saturday from 10 a.m. till 6 p.m. And, you could come on down to the Visual Arts Building and... Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's open over the long weekend as well.
Mm-hmm.
So Friday and Saturday and Sunday and Monday it's open. It's definitely free.
Mm-hmm.
But catalogs are $20 if you do want to purchase one,
right.
And those will be available at the door as well.
Will people be able to speak with the artists and talk to them about their work?
Well, at the opening, you know, it's definitely a good time to come down because all the graduating students will be here and you can certainly congratulate them on their work and that's a big function of the opening is that of any art event is that you are able to meet the artist and have a chance to kind of talk with them about their ideas. Some of the artists will also be present as door supervisors. When you come in the door, you can certainly talk to them about the work. And like I said, the catalog that they produced all has artist statements in it from each of the artists, so they're able to kind of look at or get a glimpse into, you know, a very short, concise statement about the ideas that they're presenting through the work.
Uh-huh. And what have you heard from students so far about why they're excited for the exhibition?
Well, people are very definitely excited that they're graduating, of course, and it's a whole different... thing to anticipate going on beyond graduation, what they're going to be doing. But it is, for a lot of the students, the first time they've publicly exhibited their work. So that is also, you know, a feeling of anticipation. Speaking, you know, from my own experience as an artist, it's something that you can't quite compare. It's definitely a huge thing to anticipate the opening, and you know, you've been working, like I said, quite isolated, you know, having dialogue with your peers, with your professors. But once you put your stuff up in public, it has a whole different dialogue emerge about the work, and people's responses to it are all very individual. So I think everybody's really excited about that and a bit nervous, I'm sure, in some ways. But for the most part, you know, I feel a lot of great energy coming out of their work and what they're putting forward.
And is this exhibition kind of an opportunity for artists to network a little bit and kind of get those opportunities past graduation?
Yeah, definitely. There's, you know, through the catalog, it is a way to disseminate their ideas and their work. And then that's a great result. But there's right now, I'm just looking at the Facebook invite, and right now there's over 200 people going, 57 maybe. So, you know, there's definitely a lot of people who will be at the opening, and that's the point of putting the work out in public, that it does allow you to network and the work to kind of gain its own life. So through the catalog, each of the artists has their email address. So if you are interested in the work or you want to talk to the artist about it further, there's always the potential for that.
And one more thing. You mentioned earlier the importance of visual arts in the community. How do you feel that visual arts is important to our own Victoria and UVic community in specific?
Yeah, I think, you know, there has been a lot of overlap with other areas outside of visual arts because we are coming from a faculty of fine arts. So there is a writing department, a theater department, and a music department. So there, you know, I think it's important to have that divergence, I guess, from... other disciplines that are maybe science-based, something a bit more open-ended to exploration, you know, about being human.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of I think a necessary component of being human is the creative side of things, and that's something that shouldn't be dismissed, but it should be celebrated.
Uh-huh. So what do you hope people will walk away with after viewing this exhibition and seeing our new artists?
I hope they have some insight into the potential of creativity and that they can learn to appreciate the potential of where work can go and the ideas that are coming forward and the inventiveness that's out there. And I think they'll be really surprised when they take a look and see the diversity of approaches to displaying things visually and putting ideas out there visually.
Mm-hmm. Right. So lastly, can you just tell our listeners one more time where they can find out more information when the exhibition is taking place and for how long?
Okay. It's in the Visual Arts Building. Like I said, it opens on Thursday at 7 o'clock. They do have a Facebook page. It can be linked to from the Visual Arts website. And it's under Split BFA Grad Show. That's the Facebook page. And you could also go to the Visual Arts Facebook page as well. It's in the Visual Arts Building, and that's... if you don't know where that is, there is a map on the website as well.
Okay. Great. So it sounds like it's going to be a really exciting exhibition, and I really want to wish you and all the new graduates a lot of good luck for the exhibition.
Oh, well, thank you so much. I'm sure they'll appreciate hearing that.
Great. Thank you so much for coming on the show today, Jennifer.
No problem.
All right.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
So that was Jennifer Stillwell, who is helping to supervise the Split exhibition, which is done by upcoming graduates of the Visual Arts Bachelor of Fine Arts degree here at UVic. And that is opening on April 17th, so you guys can go and check that out. Earlier in today's show, I had... Mercedes Baptiste Bennett, who is the artistic director of Cruel Tears, Lagrimas Crueles, which is going to be playing at the Blue Bridge Repertory Theater, and that's premiering on May 1st. So there's lots of really great artistic events that are coming up later in the month that I really want to encourage you guys to look into if you enjoyed listening to those interviewees today. So that was today's episode of Women on Air. Have a great day.